And now, a man who campaigned against Barack Obama in all 57 states, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I'm your host, Mark Gillar, and what a very special show we have today. Two great guests on at once. Lori Cardoza Moore, who is the president of Proclaiming Justice to the Nations. She's also been named a special UN envoy on Israel affairs by the World Council on Christian Churches. I got to tell you, just a person who has fought the spreading or the creeping Sharia in America and has been successful in that battle. Also, Pamela Giller, she's the author of The Post-American Presidency, also the author of Stop the Islamization of America, as well as the person who runs the Atlas Shrugs website. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Hey, Mark.
How are you? I'm guessing you two know each other.
Oh, we do. Good morning, Pamela.
Hey, how you doing, Lori? Great work you're doing.
Yeah, and you too. I just admire what you're doing, and I'm so encouraged to see all the progress that you are making in helping us stem this tide, this threat that we are facing here in the United States. So, as always, it's great to be on the platform with you.
Thank you, and right back at you, girlfriend.
Thank you.
Now, a lot of people would look at this from a distance and say, well, you two are just standing in the way of religious freedom, opposing mosques being built. What would you say to someone who says that what you're doing in trying to stop some of these mosques is a bad thing?
Anybody that says that actually is a dissembler. They're standing in the way of religious freedom. My religious freedom cannot be encroached to accommodate special rules or special classes for Islamic supremacists. I'm sure I can't speak for Lori, but I don't oppose all mosques. But I clearly oppose mosques built by Islamic supremacists, Rabats built by the Muslim Brotherhood, mosques that are asking for special accommodation, violation of city ordinances, parking, size, giant mosques on quiet residential streets where there are no other houses of worship and no businesses, and these giant mosques going up on quiet streets, which completely change the neighborhood in less than 5 years. People, city and town boards have a right to the architectural integrity of their neighborhoods, and that has nothing to do with religious freedom.
That's it. I agree with Pamela's statement. And in fact, case in point is here in Middle Tennessee. I'm sure your listeners are familiar with the ICM, the Islamic Center of Murfreesboro. And it's gotten a lot of national attention over the last 2 years as we have been raising awareness about this particular mosque. What's interesting about the mosque, originally, I mean, this community, the Muslim community in Murfreesboro, was quite small for a long time. They say that the mosque has been there for, you know, over 20 years. And for most of those 20 years, this community, the Muslim community, lived happily and quietly and without any persecution from anyone in the community for almost 20 years. But it's been recently, since the changing of the guard with the leadership at the Islamic Center of Murfreesboro, 3 years ago, a new imam comes into the community. He comes from Al-Hazar University, which we all know, that university in Cairo where Obama spoke several years ago, is one of the leading mosques in teaching Sharia law. And so we have the imam who comes, he implements and brings in a new board. One of his board members happens to have a MySpace page where he is recruiting Muslims to kill Jews to free Palestine. In Murfreesboro, they have two pro-Hamas rallies in the last 3 years. So what is the difference between the old mosque that once resided in the community that now wants to expand and have a almost 53,000 square foot facility built for, they originally said 200 people, then they came back and said, oh, it's 250 people, and this mosque is going to service the 10 counties surrounding us. What is the difference between those two mosques? And my issue and the issue with the plaintiffs in Murfreesboro who filed the lawsuit to stop the construction of the new mosque is that something has changed here in our community. It's not safe for either the Jewish community or the Christian community if this type of mentality or belief is coming into our community. So we are not, in fact, I recently spoke, there was a women's conference with Muslim women who participated in a conference to discuss the violence against women as a result of the Arab Spring. And I was able to come and present the violence against minority women in these Muslim countries as a result of the Arab Spring. Excuse me. And it was quite telling because here are women like Pamela and I, mothers, wives, some grandmothers, all coming together because they did not want to lose the opportunity to have their voice as women expressed on the table of these communities in these countries where this Arab Spring was going on. And to hear these Muslim women, one woman from Tunisia made the statement that this Arab Spring cannot bypass the women's voice and that we need to start vetting out the imams who come in to speak in our mosques, who are promoting anti-Israel or killing Jews propaganda. That was quite shocking to me. But I know, and I'm sure as Pamela knows, there are many women in Muslim countries that don't want to be beaten, that don't want to be abused, that don't want to be forced into having their daughters have to undergo female genital mutilation. So we're not, I say all that to say is, we're not opposed to Muslims. Muslims have lived in this country for many, many years peaceably. It's been since 9/11 that we've seen an increase in this radical extremist viewpoint in some of the mosques across the country. So we have to, as the Muslim woman from Tunisia said, we have to vet out what imams are coming in to our mosques in the United States. What are they promoting? Is it peace? Or is it jihad?
It isn't radical. It is pure Islam. It is authentic Islam. They're not wrong. They're citing the Quran chapter and verse.
Yes, you're right, Pamela. They are.
And to your point about the women, you know, I did a conference last month on the Jessica Mogdad Human Rights Conference on Honor Killing. It was the first, it was really historic, in Dearborn, on the anniversary of her death. And the reason why it got so much press was because the family that was complicit in her murder, and many times, actually all the time, in these honor killings in the West, whether it's Nour al-Maliki or Amina and Sarah Saeed, Asia Hassan, the family they're co-conspirators in their murders. The reason why it got so much press is because the family was against my using her name. The family that was complicit in her murder, and this, of course, the media, the self-enforcing Sharia, and they self-enforce the Sharia media, you know, they were all over the family like a cheap suit, and this is how, you know, we got publicity. And it was standing room only. And I will tell you that it is very disturbing that the Muslim groups do not support the work that we do in increasing awareness of honor killings or getting these girls to safe houses. And this is to Lori's point. You know, where are the Muslim groups standing against the Sharia, standing against FGM? There are pieces of legislation right now that are being considered against female genital mutilation, clitorectomies. And one legislator said that he got a call from the leader of a Muslim group saying that the FGM legislation was an attack on Muslim groups.
Where are the women's groups in all of this? I mean, where is the National Organization of Women on this?
I mean, to lunch.
Feminist groups, feminism is rooted in Lenin Marxist dogma. The idea that you're saying empower us, but we want the government to pay for it, is in and of itself contradictory. It's oxymoronic. The left aligns itself with the totalitarian ideology of the day, whether it's communism or Trotskyism or National Socialist Workers' Party, which was Nazism. Islam is collectivism. There is no unique soul under Islam. And I believe the left loves to control people. This is what they do. They love. They are, you know, the essential battle here is the battle of the ages, which is individualism versus collectivism. And what is Islam but religious, you know, religious statism, religious collectivism? There is no individual. There is no separation of mosque and state. Here in America, I don't care if you worship a stone. Just don't stone me with it. Unlike Jewish law, which is applicable to Jews, and canon law, which is applicable to Catholics, the Sharia is a comprehensive legal system that controls every aspect of human life and asserts authority over non-Muslims. This is the key. It asserts its authority over non-Muslims, which is why you see the persecution of Christians and Hindus and Jews, the slaughter, the oppression of Christians and Hindus and Jews and Sikhs in Muslim countries, because the Sharia is applicable to all. And this is what we're fighting. These Muslim groups that are against the foreign law prohibitions, American law for American courts, to me, that's screaming what their agenda is. But again, you see the enemy media going along that it's anti-religious. It's not anti-religious. Everybody knows if you want to get married under Islamic law or canon law or Jewish law, this is not the problem. American law for American courts is not about civil. It's about constitutional law. It's about federal law. And they obfuscate and they disassemble and they confuse people. And this is how they get their agenda across. But on this, we are winning because people fundamentally know the Sharia is the most radical and extreme ideology on the planet. And as far as the women's groups go, whenever there's an honor killing and you call them for comment, they go, oh, you have to speak to the Islamic groups. Why? Are those women different? Are those women not entitled to equality under the law? Shame on the women's groups. Shame on them.
That's exactly right, and I agree with what Pamela has stated. You know, these women's groups, because they are rooted in this this Marxist communist ideology, we find an interesting relationship being formed between the radical or the Marxists and the leftists of this country with Islam. And they're building this relationship now because they have common interests. And, of course, it is against the West. It is against freedom. One of the interesting things that I found in meeting with these Muslim women was even Daisy Khan, which shocked me, because I've been following the issue of her husband and the mosque at the Ground Zero Mosque and Daisy Khan herself. But she even admitted that Christians are being persecuted in these countries, and it is a growing problem. Which did she mean it? I mean, as I sat there across the table from her in this meeting, she was very sincere in her comment. But I think what's going to happen is women, mothers, daughters, grandmothers, we as women who understand what is at risk here, it's our freedoms as women. It's freedoms for our children, for our daughters, for our sons. But we have the ability as mothers to influence the next generation, this generation and the next generation. Where we are wives, we are mothers, we are daughters, we are sisters, and we can influence and impact our men, the men in our lives, to change the mindset. And I think with all the education that's going on with Sharia, with regards to what Sharia really is, I think we are mobilizing a lot of Americans. We see in Europe, we see that Europeans are beginning to realize we made a huge mistake. Hopefully, we will learn from that here in the United States, especially with the upcoming elections, which is so critically important. You know, every year we say, you know, every time we have a presidential election cycle, we always say, oh, this is the most important election of our lifetime. Well, this truly is the most important elections coming up in November of our lifetime. Will we undergo and will we submit to tyranny, or are we going to start heading back on the course of real, true freedom?
Let me ask you both, is there any doubt in either of your minds that Barack Obama, at least at some point in his life, was a practicing Muslim and may still cling to much of that ideology?
Look, I wrote the book, Post-American Presidency, The Obama Administration's War in America. I researched him for years. There was so much out there that was a stunning indictment on this man. He was born a Muslim. You're not allowed to say that, but it's true. Look, in Islam, if your father is Muslim, you're a Muslim. In Judaism, if your mother is a Jew, you are a Jew. He was born a Muslim. His stepfather, who adopted him, Lolo Satoru, was a Muslim. He was raised in the largest Muslim country in the world, in Indonesia, from the ages of 6 to 12. He went to school, studied Quran, studied Islam. He told Nicholas Kristof the prettiest sound he ever heard was the Muslim call to prayer at sunset.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he is in his heart, I don't know what's in his heart, whether he is or he isn't a Muslim, I don't think is the point. I think the question really is, if he is a Muslim, what would he be doing differently? And the answer to that is nothing. I mean, the media, the N-media, is criminally silent in its cover-up of what's going on in the world. I mean, you know, I'm always depicted as some kind of, radical or extremist, and it's really all of this is not really a big deal. Really? Really? Whole swaths of continents, North Africa and the Middle East, are literally on a dime. Secular regimes for decades are being turned over to al-Qaeda and jihadist elements installing Sharia governments in, for example, Tunisia and now Mali. I mean, Timbuktu is being renamed, and Algeria and Morocco is falling. And the first Muslim country that made a peace with Israel, Egypt, is now falling to the Muslim Brotherhood. And at the time, the week that the protest happened, I warned of this. And, of course, I was derided and smeared by the left, the blogger who loves Mubarak. You're damn right I love Mubarak. He was the most liberal. Now, you may not think he was liberal enough. Well, we can debate that, but there are degrees of damage. And so we're seeing, do you think this is happening in a vacuum? Do you think this is static? That these changes on the global landscape, nothing happens for decades, and decades happen in a day. You think they are without consequence? Mm-hmm. This is an amazing and catastrophic turn of events. And here we are in America, you know, in a stagecoach that is running, that is going 100 miles an hour. The driver has fallen off. It's headed for a cliff, and we're drinking tea in the back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just to answer your question also from the Christian perspective, you know, Obama was under the tutelage of Reverend Jeremiah Wright and professed to be a Christian. And I am a Christian. I was raised a Catholic, have been in the Protestant faith, and I can assure you what Reverend Jeremiah Wright preaches from his pulpit is not Christianity. It's not biblically based. It is liberation replacement theology. It is promoting, it is a peddling a soft Islam to his community. And unfortunately, Obama set for 20 years under his teaching. And you cannot tell me that the influence of what he was taught did not impact his judgment and where he is. I don't know in his heart. I agree with Pamela. I don't know the man's heart. But you know something? We're taught in Christianity to look at the fruit of the labor. And you will see in who they are as evidence of that fruit that is produced. And as Pamela so eloquently stated, that if you look at the decisions that Obama has made, he does not reflect a biblical Christian worldview. He is not promoting that. And yes, Pamela's right, this whole Arab Spring that we're seeing sweeping through the Middle East and even into Europe, in through the West, it's very frightening to see the course of action that is being taken place. We are under threat. And unfortunately, while all of this is happening, there is no leader of freedom, of justice, of righteousness, because the United States is being whittled down. We used to be the beacon of hope for people around the globe. People wanted to come and live in the United States, and we have lost our footing. We have lost our voice, and that's why it's so important that we speak up and defend justice and righteousness. I think I can speak for Judaism and Christianity. We are both commanded by God to pursue justice. The word says, justice, justice, thou must pursue. And in the prophet Ezekiel, I was reading in chapter 33, there is an important role that the sentinel plays When the sentinel sees an enemy advancing, the sentinel is required biblically to announce and let the innocent people of the area know that the enemy is advancing. If the sentinel does not mark, then the blood that is spilled by those innocent people because of the enemy advancing will be required of that sentinel. We have a responsibility, as Pamela does and many other leaders who know this truth, to speak out despite what the media says, despite the false accusations that are hurled at us every time we come out on a position against this. We have to continue to be vigilant.
Jeremiah Wright was a Muslim. He converted. His is not a Christianity, to Lori's point. It's black liberation theology. It's Nation of Islam. It's Chrislam. And for a man to sit in that pew and listen to that vile incitement to hatred is astounding, that he would sit in the most powerful position in the world. You know, he, as I outline in my book, he is relinquishing American sovereignty and American hegemony. And the spread of evil is merely a symptom of a vacuum. Wherever evil wins, it's only by default, by the moral failure of those who evade the fact that there can be no compromise on basic principles. And this is what you're witnessing across the world. And what I find most disconcerting is, look, there's always going to be unqualified, evil, bad people who would like very much to be in power, who would like very much to be in the most powerful position in the world. I don't fault Obama for that, or the people that put him there. I fault the American people who voted for him that didn't do their homework. I mean, my whole book was basically written in 2007 and 2008. I broke the story of the thousands of dollars coming in from Hamas-controlled areas in Gaza, the phone banks campaigning for Obama in Gaza. This was not granted. The big media was covering up for him, and he was really marketed to the American people like Diet Coke. Like, you know, a brand new Coke. He was. It was really a branding, and it was really a marketing. It was my business before, you know, I was a publisher of the New York Observer and the director of strategic planning in the New York Daily News before 9/11. So I understand how he was marketed. But the point is that where is America now? How does he even have double-digit approval ratings? It's unfathomable to me. It shows the power still of big media. It shows the power still. I think that they are the real problem. The enemy media is the biggest weapon our enemy has in their arsenal. And we're like David, you know. But then again, that turned out all right, David and Goliath. You know,
right,
so
right.
We can hope. We hope.
How many honor killings do you think have taken place in America, Pamela?
This is a big problem to determine. I'll tell you why. I tried to glean from the data, from the statistics of, you know, how many Muslim girls died, let's say, under the age of 30, although we know, like yesterday in North Carolina, that was an honor killing, where the man killed his wife that had left him and said he wanted to die as a martyr. That will not be classified as an honor killing. You have Fatima Abdullah in Florida. Last year we were protesting because here you have a woman who was honor killed. She had confided in her Christian neighbor, that she was scared to death. She had shamed the family. Her husband had divorced her, of course, because she couldn't have children, so she's utterly worthless to a devout Muslim husband. As she said, her brother had done unspeakable things to her, and then she was murdered. And the only reason why we know she was murdered is because a Christian prayer group that the neighbor was in would pray for her. And she was murdered, and the Hillsborough law enforcement, Tampa, classified the murder as a suicide. They said she had suicided herself by banging her head on a coffee table.
Oh, come on.
Yes, this is true. Banging her head on a coffee table, which, by the way, you can't do. You'd pass out before you died. But this is not the point. If it wasn't for the work that my organization and I was doing on the blog, and Florida Family Association filed a Freedom of Information Act request, got the autopsy reports, and you saw to a layman, the picture, she had been beaten senseless. But my informant in the medical examiner's office told me that the medical examiner had classified it as a suicide because they were afraid of inflaming the Muslim community. This is where we are in America, murdering while Muslim, okay? That you can get away with murder so as not to inflame the Muslim community. This is still to this day shocking to me. Now, this determination, classification of her murder was made when Rivka Barry was discovered. So they were really afraid. You know, Rivka Barry became, again, a national news story. Here was a girl, a Christian convert out of Islam, a teenage girl who hid it from her parents. Her mosque spied on her because it's part of, as you know, the ideology that you cannot leave Islam. And her father, he called the father, called the parents, and the father said, if you have Jesus in your heart, I'm going to kill you. So she ran away, as any normal person would do. And then you saw what happened. You saw the media go after her. I mean, viciously, this young, sweet, virgin, 17-year-old girl, AP student, A student, went after her. I mean, there are millions of girls who run away. They're selling their bodies. They're doing drugs. Where's the media on those girls? No. The Muslim girl who left Islam, that's the one that they went after, viciously. And I was a huge public advocate of this girl, and I bring that up because I was sued. For $10 million.
I remember, yeah.
By her parents' Muslim attorney, Omar Tarazi, $10 million for 2 years, upwards of six figures, hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees. This is what they do to shut people up. So it's a big, much bigger problem than we know. These girls are living in abject terror. They live in homemade concentration camps. They lead two lives. They go to school, and you'll notice they're always vested in the West. They play volleyball, they play tennis, they're AP, and then they go home, and they're slaves. They live completely different lives, and the West is completely failing them because they go to their teachers, Amina and Sarah Saeed. They go to law enforcement, Banaz Mahfouz, and because there is a fundamental misunderstanding of honor killings under Islam, that it is sanctioned, page 584, the sanctioning of killing of your offspring, that they do not understand. They send them home. And I cannot give you a figure. Look, the UN, which is driven largely by the Organization of Islamic Conference, which is the largest body of nations in the world, and certainly, of course, at the UN, it's 56 Muslim countries plus the Palestinian Authority, which is why you see the UN driven largely by Islamic mandates, you know, the defamation of religion, which is blasphemy under the Sharia, the restriction of free speech, the condemnation of Israel on a daily basis, because Israel is, if you understand Islamic Jew hatred, Israel, the mere existence of Israel is offensive, is insulting to devout Muslims. And so my answer to your question is, I don't know. The UN says 5,000. That is an absolute insult to the tens of thousands of dead girls. You know how many dead girls are under the porches of Pakistan?
No.
I can't answer you, but I can tell you that it's grossly underreported. There's a lawsuit now in Dearborn against the Dearborn law enforcement for covering up honor killings.
Well, Lori, given your work at the UN, would you like to respond to Pamela's comments?
Pamela is right on, and part of the problem, the biggest problem that we have with this threat to Israel and to our freedoms, even here in the West, is this the scales being tipped at the United Nations. One of the only glimmers of hope that we have found at the world as a special envoy to the World Council of Independent Christian Churches, we enjoy a special consultative status at the United Nations as an NGO or a non-governmental organization. Ironically, when I go to these meetings at the UN and we talk about these issues of human violations of human rights and talking about the persecution of Jews and Christians in these meetings, the majority of the NGOs that show up at these meetings are Christian. There's 200 NGOs represented at the United Nations. UNRWA, we know UNRWA is one of them, World Health Organization, of course, UNESCO, but the majority of those NGOs are Christian-run organizations, and they drank the Kool-Aid with regards to what's happening in Israel and the Palestinian so-called Palestinian area, that this whole conflict between the Arabs in Judea and Samaria and in Gaza is a result of Israel occupying the land. So what our goal is, as we're going in, is to start building relationship with these NGOs, because the NGOs are really the hands and the feet to the Secretary General executing his agenda through the United Nations. And so we're going specifically and targeting these Christian audiences or these Christian NGOs. And I find every time I go to these meetings and I challenge the status quo and challenge the ideologue that is being represented in the meetings, Christians come up to me afterwards. There's applause for the statements that I make. There's a reason why. It's because when people hear truth, they're going to respond to it. But unfortunately, as I found, as I sit in these meetings, nobody challenges what is being offered up on a platter. Everybody goes along. It's like mind-numb robots in these buildings. And so our goal is to try to infiltrate by reaching out to the Christians, reminding them of who Israel is, who the Jewish people are, and what our biblical responsibility is to them. And that's why we founded Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, to reach the Christians, because Christians should know better. Christians should be standing up to speak on behalf of these poor Muslim women. I can only imagine. We've seen the cases of the honor killings here in the United States, and I agree with Pamela. We don't really know, because even law enforcement is afraid to really report what is accurately going on in these communities. So it's important that we, as Christians, both Jewish women, Christian women, come together in defense. And that was one of the cases that I made at the Women's Conference at the United Nations a couple of months ago, was that we Christian women have an obligation, and Jewish women in the United States, to make sure that the Muslim women who want to be free have that opportunity here in the West. But we need the Muslim women who are fighting for their freedoms and their rights in these Muslim countries under this oppression to remember our Jewish and our Christian sisters who are having to live under that as well. You know, there's a great, in Andy Bostrom's book, The Legend of Islamic Antisemitism, he has a great quote, because this battle that we're fighting is not new. It's been going on from generation to generation. He quotes Maimonides, who is a great Jewish sage. Maimonides had written in Epistle to the Jews of Yemen that the nation of Ishmael persecute us severely and devise ways to harm us and to debase us. None has matched it in debasing and humiliating us. None has been able to reduce us as they have. We have done as our sages of blessed memory instructed us, bearing the lies and absurdities of Ishmael. We listen but remain silent. In spite of all this, we are not spared from the ferocity of their wickedness and their outbursts at any time. On the contrary, the more we suffer and choose to conciliate them, the more they choose to act belligerently toward us. You know when this was written, Mark? Maimonides wrote this in 1172.
Yeah. Actually, just so that you know, just for historical accuracy, it was Bacheyor, the world's leading scholar on Islam in the West, who discovered that quote, but I just wanted to for the record to clarify that. And Laurie is absolutely right. The problem here is that these Muslim women that want to escape, it's not like a woman who wants to escape her battering husband. Once she gets away from the husband, she's safe. A woman, a Muslim woman, it's an incredible journey, like Wafa Sultan, to leave, because it's not just the husband. It's not just the family. It's the mosque. It's the whole community. Look at the Muslims who speak out here in America, the few, the rare, the unicorns. Look at what they suffer from the Council of American Islamic Relations, and these are all Muslim Brotherhood groups, as named in the largest terrorist funding trial in a nation's history, the Holy Land Foundation trial. But the Islamic Society of North America, the Muslim Student Association. I mean, they come under withering criticism, and they are pariahized and marginalized in a way that I don't think Western minds begin to understand. They are completely and utterly alone, and that. that's why what Lori said is so critical. We have not established here in the West that the righteous are those. We are sanctioning the Islamic supremacist voices. You see how much power ISNA has. They're in the White House. Gaia Mogahed is in the White House. CARE is in the White House. You know, and that was Bush. And I loved Bush, but he made some critical and I think basic fundamental mistakes after 9/11 because there was no more teachable moment than after 9/11, and to call it a religion of peace and gloss over. I mean, I understand the objective. The objective was to say to Muslims, okay, you're either with us or against us. You know, what camp are you in? But it's much bigger than that because Osama bin Laden was a true Muslim. It's authentic Islam. And this is what was not explained and still grossly misrepresented to the American people. And so those Muslim women, look, the real, true, the only Arab Spring, I don't consider what's happening in Arab Spring. I consider it an Islamic revolution. No, the only Arab Spring, and it really wasn't Arab, it was Persian, was in June, July, and August of 2009. Because in Iran, they have been living under the boot of the Sharia since 1979. They know. They know what all of these other countries like Egypt and Tunisia and Morocco and so on and so forth, Lebanon and now Jordan, don't know. And that was a real freedom revolution. You could tell by the people in the street it was mostly women.
Mm-hmm.
None of these other ones looked like that. It was women with eyeliner and lipstick and hijab, so what? But this was the real – and what did Obama do during the only real freedom revolution? Nothing. He went out and he took his kids out for ice cream. They had signs saying, Obama, you are either with us or against us, while they were being mowed down in the street. We saw it. We saw Netta Sultan. We saw what was going on. The young men and women were raped to death in the prisons. And I will tell you, if we had helped them, and we didn't have to send people in there, even though we had military on both sides of them, thanks to George Bush. You had Afghanistan on one side, and you had Iraq on the other side of Iran. If you had removed the regime, you would have removed the head of the snake, because Iran has been the largest state sponsor of terror for the past 30 years. It's Iran. Iran is Hezbollah. Iran is supporting Hamas. Iran is agitating in Bahrain. Iran is who we're fighting the Shia in Iraq. Iran is supporting the Taliban in Afghanistan. Iran is agitating against Israel. Always. It's always been Iran. You would have changed the course of human history. And Obama, believe it or not, would have gone down in history as one of the great freedom defenders, along with Churchill, of all time. It would have been easy for him. It was a gift.
Okay, in the time we have left, we've got about 6 minutes left. There's an old saying, if you bring up a problem and you don't suggest a solution, you're just whining about it, and I'm certainly not suggesting either of you is doing that. But what can people do in terms of being vigilant in their communities for this creeping Sharia, for the building of these new mosques, which many people know coddle terrorists? What can they do to be on the lookout for it? And then, Lori, I know you've had some success in Tennessee keeping a mosque from being built. What would the steps be for a group, regardless of the type of group, that would want to keep this from happening? What would their steps be?
Well, I just want to say, it's why I wrote the book, Stop the Islamization of America. It's a practical guide to the resistance. I'm going to let Lori speak, but it's a handbook for fighting the Sharia and the Islamization of America. But you go ahead, Lori. I'm sorry to have interrupted you.
Well, I want to encourage your listeners to order that book because it is an excellent resource to utilize in communities. This battle is going to be fought community by community. If we can strengthen our neighborhoods, if we can strengthen and educate our children, the biggest problem I see and the reason why all of this has come in is because we have dumbed down our education system. So first and foremost, Mark, education is the key. We've got to start calling a spade a spade. We've got to start confronting this issue and calling it what it is and focusing on the people. The unfortunate thing in all of this whole media debate about accusing people like Pamela and I as being Islamophobic or anti-Muslim, anti-mosque, is that people do not do their homework, they don't study, they don't hear from the Muslims who don't want this type of Sharia. They want to live in freedom. They left those oppressive regimes to bring their families here. But we need for them to speak out in their communities. And the problem is it's a double-edged sword, because if they speak out, then they become targeted, as Pamela said, by the community, by the mosque, by the leadership in that community. But we first have to educate, and then we have to mobilize people to stand up. People should be going and attending their city council meetings, their county commission meetings, hearing about what's going on. Because I can tell you, here in Tennessee, there has been a concerted effort by the Muslim community to court the county commissioners and the city councilmen across the state. That mosque in Murfreesboro didn't happen in a vacuum. It happened as a result of a lot of hard work that they have been on the ground doing for many, many years in the state to go in and read the constitutions or the laws of the governing counties and the governing cities to see who had the most lenient rules when it came to bringing in a religious system like this where they could get away with this. And before Murfreesboro, we had the issue come up in Brentwood where they were trying to put in a mosque right down the street from our home. And there were 600 people who showed up at the city council meeting. We also had a presence. We exposed that the mosque that was wanting to build in Brentwood, Tennessee, was 10 minutes from the mosque in Nashville. The mosque in Nashville has a history of harboring terrorists. We know Carlos Bledsoe, the movie that is coming out for our son. Pamela, what's the name of the
Losing
Our Sons? Yes. That movie is coming out this week in a lot of locations. But Carlos Bledsoe was a member of that congregation. There was a Somali warlord who was able to obtain $444,000 federal, state, and local tax dollars that ended up in Somalia, who was also another terrorist. And by the time the feds figured out what had happened, he was back in Somalia. Then there was a protege of the One-Eyed Sheikh who was behind the first World Trade Center bombing. He was the imam of the mosque in Nashville. And this imam was whisked out of the city a couple days after 9/11. He was removed. So we've got to bind together as a community. We have to be educated. We've got to show up at these county commission and city council meetings, and we have to ask the tough questions. It may not be popular, but you've got to invite people like Pamela and myself into your communities. You've got to talk about these issues, and then you have to get people to be willing to stand up and take a stand like we have. Pamela and I are just businesswomen who saw what was happening and said, you know what? We can't be silent. We have to do something. We have to speak up. And there are many Pamelas and Lauries out there, mothers who are concerned about the direction of this country, because we've got to ask ourselves, how will we leave this nation for our children? How are we going to leave this nation for our grandchildren? We have an opportunity right now, today, to make a difference. All we have is our lifetime. And what we do now is going to determine the course for our children and our children's children.
Pamela, I'll give you the last word. What advice do you have for communities that want to keep this from happening in their area?
People need to understand first that, and this is on page 75 of my book, that the term Islamophobia did not simply emerge from out of nowhere. It was invented deliberately by a Muslim Brotherhood front organization, the International Institute for Islamic Thought. A former member of the IITT renounced the group, was an eyewitness to the creation of the word. The loathsome term, he said, is nothing more than a thought-terminating cliché conceived in the bowels of Muslim think tanks for the purpose of beating down critics. So you need to understand that it is a tool. That's the first thing, a weapon to shut you up. Second of all, people also need to understand that when those planes went into those towers, those doctors and lawyers and stockbrokers and mothers and fathers and children, were they our soldiers? Were they wearing uniforms? Were they our fighters? The answer to that is yes. And that means that you are a soldier. Every person in this country better fight for their freedom. Those that stand by and think that it's all going to pass or they can be a casual observer, they are part of the problem. The enemy counts on them. In terms of fighting mosques, we're fighting a mosque in Sheepshead Bay. I'm involved in a number of mosque fights. I suggest that you play it like a chess game. You fight it on your city ordinances. You want to win. You want to win. And that's why I strongly recommend that you follow whatever the laws of your town are. If it exceeds the height, if it exceeds the parking, you have to fight it on those grounds. Because whether we like it or not, everything is being framed within Islamophobic, racist, anti-Muslim context. And it's not about that. There are plenty of places that you can build giant mosques, okay? Not in the middle of a small town that have 20 Muslims as residents. There's a reason why they're doing that. There's a reason why, according to the Muslim Brotherhood documents, where they are establishing these rabats. They are a beachhead. And it's in. This is not Pamela Geller. This is according to the Muslim Brotherhood project. And so you want to win. So Lori is absolutely sagacious and right on the point of they have been doing this for years. They've been studying the laws. They've been courting these moronic town officials, okay, who usually are ignored by everybody. And by the time they're in that city council meeting, it's a done deal. Which is why the point that yesterday what happened in Murfreesboro is so brilliant. It was like the people said, hey, but you didn't tell us. You did not give us ample warning. It was a done deal. And the judge saw it, and the judge agreed, and I say kudos, because who has come under more scorn and derision than the people of Murfreesboro? And so I think that was quite brilliantly done. Of course, now CARE is apoplectic. They're like rabid dogs over what happened in Murfreesboro, and they want the DOJ to get involved because, as I've written in my under my Freedom of Information Act request, I've gotten all these documents that prove that the DOJ under Holder is really acting as the legal arm for Muslim Brotherhood groups here in America. So they've called upon their legal arm to get involved in Murfreesboro. This is not a religious issue. This is an integrity to city. This is how I would fight it because I want to win, and so this is adherence to the city rules and regulations that it apply to everyone else, apply to Muslims too.
Mm-hmm. That's right. No favoritism, and in fact we
no favoritism. Exactly, Lori.
The Department of Justice did weigh in initially too, siding with the Muslims, bypassing the constitutional rights of the citizens to have had a voice at the hearings. And it was not right the way it was handled. They didn't post, even the county commissioner, the county commission office did not, the mayor's office, did not file the agenda on the website for that meeting where this whole issue was discussed and approved to build this mosque until 10 days after the fact. They inadequately noticed the citizens. They've estimated that only 196 people from the surrounding communities could have had the opportunity to hear and be informed that there was even a meeting, but there was never a public agenda published. So nobody knew that a mosque was going to be erected. Thank God Judge Corlew even stated that the people, the citizens of Murfreesboro, that this was a major issue, not just for the community, but from people around the world have been following this case. And surely the citizens of this county were very interested in the outcome of such an issue.
Of course.
They should have been informed. They should have been informed. They weren't informed. It was our government. And, yes, again, elections. Where do your county commissioners, where do your city councilmen fall on this issue? How are they going to respond? We have got to get in. Like Pamela said, we got to get in there. We got to start courting these people. We got to find out what they believe in before they run for office. And then once they get into office, we need to hold their feet to the fire because all politics is local. It affects our communities. And as we win our communities one by one, we will eventually win our states and we will win this nation back.
Ladies, that's all the time we have today. Very quickly, though, each of you tell my listeners how they can find your websites, purchase your films, purchase your books.
My website is atlashrugs.com, or you can go also to PamelaGeller.com. My books are there. I write, I update the blog 10 times a day. I write a column, weekly column, Defending the West for WorldNetDaily.com. I'd like your listeners to know that we are having another event across the street from the CARE, a Summer Night for Civil Rights event. They're having a big event, a Summer Night for Civil Rights in Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center. We will be across the street at the Marriott Manhattan Beach. It's a Summer Night for Human Rights. And we will have the world's leading apostates, Ibn Warraq, Wafa Sultan, Noni Darwish, 10 of the world's leading apostates speaking for Pastor Youssef in Iran, calling on Muslim groups to denounce the Sharia and ask why they're not standing up for Christians and Jews across the world who are living under the death sentence of the Sharia. I ask you to join us June 23rd in Manhattan Beach from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Marriott Manhattan Beach. All the information can be found at my website.
And as for your listeners, I'd also like to encourage them to visit our website at pjtn.org. It's Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, and that they can register to get our newsletters, media, and action alerts. Stay informed, stay educated, and share the information with your family and friends.
Very, very informative show, ladies. Thank you so much for being here. I look forward to having you back sometime soon.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mark.
Enjoyed
it. Pamela, God bless you. Keep up the great work.
God bless you, girl.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillard.